You're listening to LawPod UK. It's a podcast that covers developments across all aspects of civil and public law in the United Kingdom. All the comments are current at the time of podcast publication. It's brought to you by the barristers at One Crown Office Row, and this edition is presented by Rosalind English.
The offence of coercive and controlling behaviour was introduced into the criminal law in 2015 to cover situations where there is no evidence of physical violence in a relationship, but one party is clearly a victim of a form of gaslighting and oppression. If you remember, I interviewed Claire Chiborowska about the application of this offence in family court proceedings. That was episode 43, some time ago. Today my guest is Anthony Metzer QC, head of Goldsmith Chambers, who specialises in crime, immigration, claimant civil actions against the police, defamation and inquests. Anthony used a private prosecution to persuade a religious Jewish man to grant his wife a divorce. Under Jewish law, the man must consent to a divorce, and therefore there have been numerous cases of women being trapped in marriages by recalcitrant husbands. They are known as agunu, or chained women. This case saw the secular criminal law being used to unlock a knotty problem within religious law. Anthony, thank you so much for coming on to LawPod UK to tell us about this fascinating case.
Thank you. It's very nice to be here, Rosalind.
Could you give us a bit of a background to the religious and cultural rules about divorce in these circumstances?
Yes, I can. I got to stress, I'm neither a family lawyer nor an expert in Beth Din matters, which is the Jewish religious court, but I can assist to this degree. The difficulty that aguna, which are loosely translated means chained women, within Orthodox Jewry, is that the circumstances by which a divorce is obtained religiously is that the man has to freely and willingly consent to provide the religious certificate, the get, to the woman, and the woman has to agree to accept it. So there has to be an agreement willingly entered on both sides. And that is a prerequisite before a religious divorce, before the Beth Din, the Jewish religious court, is granted. There are many examples, not just in the UK, but across the world, where there has been a refusal to provide the get, and there are devastating consequences for the woman thereafter if she wishes to continue a religious Jewish life, because she is essentially regarded as a chained woman who is not free to marry religiously anybody else on the basis of not being provided with that religious document. It's also fair to say there are very rare examples, but known examples, of where a woman has refused to accept the get, but that is much less prevalent and much less of a problem.
And I suppose, presumably, one of the obvious consequences of this is that any child by a subsequent relationship that this woman has will be considered illegitimate.
In general terms, that's right, although it is right to say that the definition of what is illegitimate in Jewish law is not quite the same as that in English law. So the children of such a relationship are called mamzerim, and they are essentially the children of forbidden relationships. So it isn't necessarily a situation in relation to a subsequent marriage and child from that subsequent marriage. But that certainly is one of the problems. And the other problem, and a more general problem, and a real one, is that the woman is not free to enter into her choice of having a marriage religiously. So she is forced then either to marry only civilly, which of course she's free to do, subject of course to a civil divorce having been obtained. But that is not recognised in the eyes of Jewish law. And so you're absolutely right, there are difficulties in terms of subsequent children, but also she doesn't have the status of a married woman in terms of her new relationship.
So the important characteristic of this case and other cases like it is that the woman in question wants to carry on her life in the religious Jewish community.
Yes, that's absolutely fundamental. I think there are examples where the woman doesn't particularly care very much and will go ahead and remarry, having got the civil divorce, and doesn't care that much. But the ones who are punished by it are those that want to continue a religious life and do things appropriately and properly religiously.
So presumably this whole business of giving a get can be made on certain conditions by the husband.
That's definitely true. In the case in which I was involved, the man was the subject of a non-molestation order already, and although it didn't materialise in the end and negotiations broke down, there was a discussion at one stage about that he would be prepared to give a get if the non-molestation order was withdrawn or taken away so that he didn't have that to face in the future. That broke down and didn't happen, but it's an example. But a more general example, which wasn't this case, is it's not uncommon for the giving of the get to be part of a wider negotiation in terms of divorce. For example, in return for money, goods, custody for of children and the like. So there are many ways in which it becomes, if you like, a weapon almost,
yes,
in terms of it being given, but only on terms.
Yes, I can see how easily it could be weaponized. So getting into the details of this particular case, I understand that it is mostly anonymized, but how did it come to you and how did you think of this relationship of this private prosecution to her dilemma?
Well, it's interesting how it came to me. Racking my brains now, it was a meeting with an extremely impressive woman called Joanne Greenway, who is now changed job. She's now the chief executive at the LSJS, which is formerly Jewish College, London School of Jewish Studies. But previously worked at the Beth Din, which is, as I say, the religious court. She's a lawyer, and she came to me with a file of a number of cases and said, we have these cases which have been frustrating from our point of view because they involve lengthy periods in which the woman is an aguna. And is there anything you can do? We've tried the family courts, and there's been a long history of trying to use the family courts, civil family courts, to try and achieve a result. And there's also been a considerable frustration, not just in this country, but internationally, in relation to the difficulty of obtaining the religious courts to assist. But she said, is there anything we can do? And she obviously was aware that I have experience as a criminal lawyer. And as a criminal barrister, I came up with this idea, which frankly, I was surprised no one appeared to have thought of it before. But I said, well, why don't we think about this? Because at the time, it was about 2 or 3 years ago we met. So it was quite new that the 2015 Act had come into place. And I said, why don't we think about controlling or coercive behaviour in an intimate relationship under Section 76 of the 2015 Act? And it really went from there. I chose which was, I thought, the strongest case. And we decided then to launch a private prosecution on the back of this offence to argue that the refusal to provide the get was one, but obviously not the only, and it couldn't be just the only, but one feature in relation to coercive and controlling behaviour.
Had the prosecution proceeded, what other evidence do you think you might have needed to obtain?
We looked carefully, or I looked carefully, at what the CPS regarded as the sort of features and factors that we were regarded as controlling or coercive behaviour, which are slightly different in definition. And we felt this case was strong in relation to other features. Good examples, which were short of physical violence, as you rightly observe, but came within that, there were aspects in which he was isolating her from her family. There were aspects of financial control. There was unreasonable behaviour in other regards, sexually, but not just sexually, in other respects, which would have been additional features which would have been important in terms of being able to pursue a successful prosecution.
And just backing up a bit, you say that efforts to sort out this kind of problem in the family courts had just come to nothing. What kind of action would you need to bring in the family courts?
Well, I'd speak as somebody who knows very little about family law, but I understand that there have been attempts brought in terms of marriage certificates, for example, civil marriage certificates, and religious ones too, that require that a get is obtained at the time of divorce, such that you can't have a civil divorce until the get is obtained.
Oh, I see.
That's one area I believe has happened, but for lots of reasons that's proved unworkable. And
yes,
also sometimes parties can be prepared to agree to a civil divorce without a religious one, particularly if you've got an example where the man no longer wants to be religious. He's perfectly happy to give the civil aspects, but objects to the religious side of things.
But in a situation where both parties are locked in the religious orthodoxy of these rules, then that's not a solution.
Yes.
Could you just tell us a little bit more about the Beth Din and
yes.
how that works?
Well, the Beth Din generally is normally composed of three what are called Dayanim, which are religious Jewish judges who have a very good expertise in terms of Jewish law, highly regarded, and will know Jewish law thoroughly and carefully, and it's a highly respected religious court in the way that other religions also have the equivalent, Sharia courts being an obvious example with Islam. The difficulty historically, which there are a number of Beth Dins in the United Kingdom, including one in London, and there are many internationally, the difficulties that has historically been with relation to the religious side of things is the question of willingly providing the get. In other words, it has to be done without external pressure.
But clearly disapproval in the Jewish community was not, in this particular case, going to be enough.
Disapproval is important, and I don't underestimate the fact that there are rabbis, there are communities, there are even relatives of the man who might put pressure on him indirectly by saying that he really should provide it, put some degree of social conscience upon him. But they clearly don't always work. As wisely my instructing solicitor who came into the case, Gary Leston Davis, said, the consequence of the case that we brought was going to be a more powerful tool than simply not calling the man up to read from the law or to do the blessings. That's called being given an aliyah.
So that's a kind of punishment?
Yes, that you sort of give a level of social ostracism within the community. But although that might work if someone was that way inclined, it clearly is much less effective than the possibility of a criminal trial, by which you've got a judge and jury, you're going to have your behaviour absolutely scrutinised by the court and run the risk of an imprisonment for a conviction.
You chose this particular case because?
I did. A number of reasons. First of all, it was a relatively recent case. That might sound bizarre because some of the cases have involved Argonaut of women for more than 20 years have not been provided with their get. So there's some really terrible long cases, and they might superficially appear to be more attractive to be the ones to bring. This one did not go back that far, but there were three reasons for that. First of all, memories fade and we need recent evidence. Secondly, the conduct had to be related to everything since the Act came into place, 2015. And thirdly, perhaps most importantly, in terms of which case we chose, we thought this was going to be just the sort of case that an English jury, British jury, would more easily identify with the victim than in some cases, because we recognise there will be a reluctance of a judge and jury to get too involved in the intricacies of a religious breakup of a relationship. But the evidence, we thought this one was really powerful. I've got to be careful about not saying anything for which you can identify either of the parties, but she was a young woman who was very persuasive when I met her in evidence. She was cool, she was calm, she was credible and would have impressed a jury in my view. He was recalcitrant, difficult, had some mental health issues and was extremely aggressive. He was aggressive not simply to her, which of course we knew about, but also was even aggressive towards Joanne in emails. And in fact, she provided the witness statement for the purposes of the case because that evidence showing his behaviour towards her, we would have sought to introduce as bad character evidence in relation to him if the case had proceeded. So we could see, we didn't think he'd make an attractive witness. We thought the evidence of other examples of coercive and controlling behaviour was strong, and we thought this was a good case to take.
So you have this secular process, which could be seen as interfering with the long-held mores of a religious community. Yes. Have you had, or has there been any pushback against this action?
It's a very good question. Maybe because I don't have a Twitter account, I've been sheltered from it. The limited degree of response to the case that I've had has actually been very encouraging. We've had Jewish Women's Aid has been very supportive. We've had the Beth Din supportive. We've had people from lots of different organisations, both mainly but not exclusively within the Jewish community, including former judges and so on, all of whom have expressed support. There have been some letters in subsequent weeks in the Jewish Chronicle after the piece was widely reported there, which I have a lot of sympathy with, which is essentially saying this was creative, it was good in this case, and there may be other cases which are useful, but it's a shame that it has required the secular courts, and surely it should be for religious courts, to Jewish religious courts, to try and solve this. And I have a lot of sympathy with that. I think it's a shame we're having to use the secular courts in this way, that it couldn't be resolved internally for the reasons you said.
Yes. And do you foresee that this offence of coercive and controlling behaviour could be used in other circumstances not involving not getting a divorce, but just sorting out an abusive relationship?
Definitely. I mean, I've been involved in other cases which are not religious cases, which have a good example, which is away from this type of case, but a good example where Section 76 has been effective, related to a case in which I was prosecuting for the state, where a police officer had sex with a woman, another police officer, and it couldn't be said that she was being raped because she was not actively making it clear that she wasn't consenting. She was essentially submitting. She was in an inferior position within the police force. It was, in my view, a gross abuse of trust, but it could not have been said to be rape. There are other examples, again, of controlling behaviour in a similar way, but that particular example of, if you like, submitting to sex in this position of a subordinate relationship is something that, again, I think potentially Section 76 has a lot of application for.
And presumably this application of Section 76 is not confined to Orthodox Jewish communities.
No, that is right. I mean, I'm no expert in other religious communities, but I understand there is, certainly within the Muslim community, there is a word which is repeated three times by the man to the woman at the time of divorce. And again, if he refuses to do that, one can readily recognise that there may be an equivalent case brought against him.
Yes, with the threat of a prison sentence rather than
threat.
Just...
Yeah, exactly. In this particular case, as I know you know, the reason we didn't pursue the case through to trial is not because we didn't think we had the evidence, but once he did ultimately, and it took time, but once he did ultimately decide to agree to provide the get before the Beth Din and she received it, we no longer thought it was in the public interest to pursue the case. Our client, of course, being a private prosecution, our client was the woman. And she'd got essentially the thing that she most wanted. She wanted after that separation and never come across him again.
And she's not at risk herself of being subject to a certain amount of disapprobation in the Jewish community because she's called in Western institutions to...
Well, that's, a very good question. I haven't heard that she has, but yes, there is that risk that somehow she will be blamed for bringing out into the open something within a closed, relatively closed community. I think that's right. Although in this case, I don't think she has. I think she's felt well supported.
But anyway, it's a risk that she was prepared to take.
She was prepared to take. But certainly, that was probably a factor for her as to whether once she got the get, whether she wanted to really go ahead. And I'm sure the right decision in that case was taken not to pursue it in the public interest. The other thing I probably should mention, since we mentioned about private prosecutions, is that when one says the word private, and as you'll appreciate, anyone can bring a private prosecution, but the state can, of course, take over the prosecution and it becomes a state prosecution. And then the state, the CPS, will decide whether or not a case should be pursued or not. And if they drop a case after that, there's no way of reviving a private prosecution. So that's one thing to bear in mind. And a lot of private prosecutions focus on fraud-type offences where there's a feeling the CPS resources are not able to properly and adequately deal with those type of crimes. But the other thing to mention is that, when one thinks about private, is that although the victim is required, or complainant, is required to fund the case initially, it does not require a conviction at the end of the day before she or he can recover their costs, provided there's a presumption that provided the case was brought reasonably, the victim or complainant can recover their costs from the state. So it comes out of the public purse. So in the end, our client will not have to pay for the prosecution. And that's a definite incentive, I think, for other people.
Yes, certainly. That's not something that people would necessarily know. Can I ask a really very basic question, which is why did it start as a private prosecution in the first place? Why wasn't it a matter for the CPS?
It is a good question. I think we did write, my instructor solicitor did contact the Crown Prosecution Service to check whether there's any interest. Obviously, this is quite niche and novel. I don't think the CPS would have been interested. Of course, they always have the right, as I've said, to take over a case. So I don't think it's a prerequisite you have to ask the CPS. But obviously, once they become aware of it, they can take over the case. But whether or not my instructor solicitor contacted them, we didn't think for a minute the CPS will be interested in it.
Oh, really? even though, as you say, you had very good evidence for the commission of this offence.
I don't think they would not have been interested because they weren't sympathetic towards the woman. I just think they would have been dubious about the prospects of success before a jury, and perhaps more to what extent the state would want to interfere in relation to the breakup of a religious marriage.
Yes, certainly. That's never going to go away, that ambiguity and problematic nature of the situation.
That said, now I think we did achieve success in the one case. We're now looking at some of the other cases which I'd previously considered. So we do anticipate that we may well see other cases ahead.
And these are cases that go further back in time?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So more chained women will be released, as it
were. We hope so. Yes. We very much hope so.
How interesting. So there will be more cases coming up, and possibly even outside the Jewish community and in other religious institutions in the future.
I think so. And it would be interesting to see one day the case does come before a jury, what they make of it.
Exactly. Well, I'm very grateful for you coming over and telling us about this, and good luck with the following cases.
Thank you very much. It's lovely to be on.
LawPod UK is presented by Rosalind English and is produced by One Crown Office Row. For more editions of LawPod UK, you can subscribe to the podcast and recommend us to a friend.